This is Phil Farron. I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It has turned off a little cooler. We have had a series of gorgeous days. Gorgeous days. And then all of a sudden, there's some kind of Arctic bomb or solar something blast. I forget what they call these things. But, it's still in the 50s. Which is much better than it has been. So, yes. And my deepest apologies and most sincere apologies for the sound of last week's podcast. That was terrible. I got it home and I listened. It's like, oh, man, this is bad. But I uploaded it anyways because, you know, it was done and kind of the thing here is not necessarily, obviously, to be very polished. Obviously, not just to chat. And, you know, like I've said before, it'll be interesting to see as I'm going along which of my ideas change over the years and which refine and which whatever. And so part of that is that I fully intend this to be a little bit raw, and when I make a mistake, I'll apologize for it, but no do-overs. We've got to keep moving forward. No do-overs. Anyways, so yeah. So last week was not so good. I apologize. Moving on. The writing is going fine. Got the books distributed for the betas, out to the beta readers, and I'm in the second week, obviously, of writing now for book 11. That seems to be going fine. I am on schedule with where I'm supposed to be at this point. I hope to make a little progress more tonight and get even farther ahead of schedule, because I have a couple of things coming up this weekend I need to take care of, like harvesting sauerkraut. So that'll take away a little time. You know, all is well there. Everything seems to be going fine. I don't have some of the pieces. I don't know exactly where I'm going. I'm not sure how the parable really, really fits in, but I think it will somewhere along the line. I had somebody ask me the other day, so when you start a new book, so you pretty much know, and it's like, no. I just gotta have a general idea of what's supposed to be happening in this book, and then we just start going. And as you go, it opens up. It's an amazing thing. It's so fascinating to watch. Yeah. Just so fascinating to watch. So all is well with the family, all is well with church. The guy who I've been renting the little rock house on our property out to for the last, I asked him the other day, I said, how long have you been renting out here? He said, I don't know, maybe 6 years. He's moving out this month and talking to another young man about moving in there, and so we're doing a little bit of stuff there. Found some rot on the side that we're having to take care of, a few little things like that. You know, life goes on. Tomorrow I am going to do a kind of a Star Wars preview day, just kind of with some of the pieces that I had last year for Star Wars, since Star Wars Day is actually like 3 weeks, and I have something else for that one. We'll see how that goes. So I'm just gonna throw out, you know, because it's Yuri Gagarin Day for one thing. April 12th, that's the day that the first human being went into space, I think, and orbited the Earth, Yuri Gagarin Day. I think they call it Yuri's Night or something, or Yuri Gagarin Night or something. Anyways, April 12th is that. April 12th also happens to be the launch of the first space shuttle, And then the United Nations has declared April 12th something like International Day of Human Space Exploration or something. So it kind of has a sort of a tie-in to Star Wars. And then it's also happens to be the Friday before taxes are due. So I figure people need a little chortle. So I thought, why not? So I hadn't actually intended. I was planned out to wear another t-shirt and stuff, but I was looking through some stuff, getting some things ready for Star Wars Day coming up, and I thought, you know what? I'm just doing that tomorrow. So hopefully we'll get a few smiles tomorrow. We'll see. So that's all good. That's all well. God, it's just so good. One of my friends that I see at Walmart every week, you know, she'll always ask me, so how are you doing? And I'll tell her the same thing every week. I am blessed. We are blessed. Goodness, we are blessed. Wow. To be at 60 and to be experiencing the love of God every day, to be living within a worldview that affords me confidence and kindness and mercy. Wow. It's good. It's good. It's good. I almost did the whole podcast on this, but I thought, I was listening to a debate, a discussion, we call it whatever you want, from England. That included the guy who did the coddling of the American mind and also a Jewish rabbi on one side of the issues. And then on the other side of the issues, I don't even know their names, I apologize, was a young woman who was proud to declare herself a snowflake, and then an African-American man. Well, couldn't be African-American because he was from England, so a person of color, we'll say, because I don't know if black is in vogue anymore, a person of color who was a professor from a college. And so they were discussing this whole thing of what's going on college campuses now and freedom of speech and when should speech be restricted, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you listen to the younger woman and the person of color talk, and while, for instance, she was talking about the fact that she absolutely believed in freedom of speech, by the same token, she was saying, you know, that there's some things that just cause such violence, and she was talking about how that she herself suffers from PTSD and had been diagnosed with that and had been able to overcome some of that with cognitive behavioral therapy. And he was talking about the violence that he had to suffer when he went to universities and the definition, I don't know if there was actual physical violence or not, but one definition he gave for that violence, if I remember correctly, was things like going to a university where the only people that were honored, the only people that had their pictures up on the wall were old white men, and that all that was being taught by old white men, and, you know, the violence that he had to suffer because of that. And very, very specific in their language and in their stressing of the word violence, that they had suffered this emotional violence because of these things. And it was really fascinating to listen to all of this. And at one point, the young lady actually made the comment, because the guy who wrote the American Coddling of the American Mind, Jonathan Hard, something. I can't remember what his name is. I apologize. I should have looked it up. He was talking about this assumption that people make. And one chapter was dedicated onto this idea that the world's an extremely dangerous place and everyone is out to get you and everything is against you. And, you know, the young woman kind of bristled at one point about that and was talking about how patronizing it is for you to classify, you know, what I'm thinking and feeling as being incorrect. And, you know, you just see this interplay of worldviews. And this idea, again, of we are all the stars of our own movies, and what we think about the world is the movie that we are starring in, and it just affects everything in our lives. And so I was going to talk about that, but then I came across this article, and I thought maybe I had talked about this article before, but I went back and I looked in the podcast and I didn't see anything. So maybe I've mentioned this in passing. I wasn't sure. That it's a TED Talk by a woman named Emma Jones, who is a reporter, and it happened at the TEDx Ghent, G-H-E-N-T. It's called The Toxic Female Gaze. And it's just so interesting because I think I've talked about these attitudes before. But again, it's, I hear people talking about this and I think to myself, well, but doesn't this and this and this, doesn't this explain this better than the mindset that you've got? But, you know, everyone's entitled to their own mindset. But in listening to the elucidation of these kinds of ideas and the solutions that people end up with that are nearly impossible to implement, it just seems like to me and my little brain that there's a better approach, but we can talk about that in a minute. What this particular speaker was talking about was the attitudes that society has towards women and women's bodies, and the attitudes that women have towards their own bodies and towards their lives. And she was talking about the fact that several years ago she had the opportunity to interview Jennifer Aniston. And at the time, Jennifer Aniston apparently was turning 40, and there was all the talk about, oh, you know, she's turning 40. And she said, the easy questions for me to ask would be the same questions that everybody else was asking. And those were questions like, well, how do you feel about turning 40 without Brad Pitt and without a baby? And now apparently you're going to lose your looks because you're getting too old. And then she said, I didn't want to do that. And she said, and then I realized that her co-star in the particular film that she was promoting at that point was Owen Wilson, and he had just turned 40 a few weeks before, and nobody cared about that. Nobody cared. And so she said, I decided to flip things around and ask Jennifer Aniston, why do you think that no one cares that Owen Wilson is turning 40 and everyone seems to be very preoccupied with the fact that you're turning 40? And she said, Jennifer Aniston gave me this wonderfully diplomatic answer about how things are tougher in the film industry for women. She said she interviewed Sandra Bullock and asked the same types of questions, and she said as I exited the room, Sandra Bullock called after to thank me so much for being the first person not to ask her about being an older woman in Hollywood and what the relationships they were to their body, and etc., etc. And then she went on to kind of try to describe the scope of the problem. And she was talking about the internet's influence and how that over the last 20 years that they've made celebrity gossip so very, very acceptable. She said Instagram, of course, is the king of social media at the moment. And she said you just keep scrolling through all these pictures of all these women perfectly posed, perfectly filtered. She was talking about how four-year-old girls know all the angles and how to pose. And she said, you know, and certainly, you know, girls like to be known as daddy's little princess. And don't we think it's the highest compliment to tell a little girl how pretty she looks today? And she said, if you go to a toy store, you just see all this explosion of pink and sparkles. And she said, this stuff is imprinted on us. And she said, when it comes to celebrity gossip, at least at the time she was doing this article, she said, it's not really the guys who are reading this. It's really the women who are clicking on these articles about age and relationships. She was talking about one of the most popular news websites in the world, which was the Mail Online. She said it's an English language publication. It gets at least 20 million viewers a day, or has 20 million viewers, and it's massive. And she said the main readers of this website are women aged between 20 and 60. She said, here I am telling you how easy it is to click on stuff. And she said a few weeks ago, she said, you know, Kim Kardashian's airbrushed backside broke the internet. And she said, sure, I clicked on that picture, you know, to see it. And she said, of course, when you click on those pictures, you're adding to advertisers' ideas about what you want to see, websites' ideas about what you want to see. And she was trying to decipher all of this, and she was talking about the fact, she said, I think we as human beings are created to yearn to seek beauty. And she said, I think we also seek a higher purpose, and it's built into our DNA. And she said, but if we turn too much on our quest for beauty or meaning, we focus on it too much, and that leads to envy and mental health problems. And she was talking at the time this podcast was recorded, which was 2017, I believe. She was talking about the fact that she had read an article that in the UK, for girls ages between 16 and 24, one in four, 25%, had admitted to self-harming, cutting themselves. And it, and she said, you know, that usually means that they feel worthless. And she said she read a survey about 17-year-old girls in the United States, and according to the survey she had read, that if you ask a 17-year-old girl what she thought about her body, that 4 out of 5 would tell you that they hated their bodies. These are startling statistics. And she was talking about the fact that anorexia, even in men, is on the rise. Young men is on the rise. And she said that she's trying to make sense of it all. And she said she passionately believes that there is a direct link between what we are seeing in the media and how we feel inside. And she said, I think there's a solution. This is when she started getting to her solution part. She said, I think there's a solution. But it's going to take a lot. And she said, firstly, she thinks that you need to start considering what you're clicking on, to where you don't just click on them. Because then that you know, for instance, you click on a picture of a young celebrity gal in a cute little dress and she's on a night out and she just looks like she has it all together. But she said you need to imagine that there's 30 paparazzi that are hunting her down at that point. And if you click on that, you're just encouraging them to continue doing that, which is true. And she said, second, she said, we really need to get behind women like Emma Watson who are calling out the system and who are, you know, trying to get some focus on it. She said, I think there's a huge question in whether or not social media needs to be regulated. She said, but that's a subject for a whole other TED Talk. She said, we have to acknowledge that we have a really toxic system, and it's pointless talking about strong female roles, and when there is one in... And I think that the mainstream media has to acknowledge that we have a really toxic system. So, and it's pointless talking about strong female roles when there's one in front of them and you're asking them whether or not they want kids. All these things are hints as to what's going on. And she was saying, you know, if we do it together, she said, this is what I want from a world of where I work in, where instead of age and bodies and relationships, we hear about women, about their talents and opinions and beliefs. Hey, I am all for that. I am all for that. But, you know, is it really society? Is it really upbringing? Is it really all these things that are imposed from the outside? And I think some of that is just, it comes, I'm getting my mail, one moment. Some of that it really comes down to this worldview issue. What are your worldviews? And how do you, what do you think is going on? And how do we deal with it? And, you know, I think all of this can be recharacterized simply by exploring what I think are the true drivers of this. And it really does you no good just to have one of them. You've got to have both pieces to really make sense of this. And I've talked about this enough that anyone who's listened to my podcasts already knows where I'm going with this. You have these, we have these deep subsystems inside of us. And I don't know if I've mentioned this particular thing or not. I think I have, but I'm going to repeat it anyways because it was just so amazing to me. I'm just staring at the TV, listening to this person say this and thinking, wow, really? What? Because they were saying, you know, and we know the source of romantic love now. We know the source because we've seen what areas of the brain light up. And what's really interesting about romantic love is it's down in that same section of the brain where we feel hunger and thirst. And romantic love is down there. And I'm thinking, what? Okay, romantic love implies some sort of intelligence at work. That's not the area of the brain we're talking about. If you're talking about the basic subsystems of hunger and thirst, you're talking about survival mechanisms. You're talking about ancient subsystems that are working in mammals, all you know, insects. They're working in fish. They're working in all across the animal kingdom. What are those? We're not talking about romantic love there. We're talking about reproductive systems. It's just that simple. And we're talking about very deep, basic survival of the species stuff. Why are men attracted to women? It's basic survival of the species stuff. Why do women get to be more of risk takers when they are fertile? Because that leads to more babies. It's basic survival of the species stuff. the reason that we are more focused on a woman getting older is because way down at the base of our being, especially a woman in her 40s, way down at the base of our being, those reproductive systems are operating both in men and in women. And in men, as women are getting older, those base reproductive systems are looking and going, can't make babies there, you know, or more difficult to make babies, or babies don't have as much of a chance to survive. I'm not saying this is right. I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's basic reproductive systems. Because in women, those reproductive systems have a time frame. You know, puberty up into mid-30s. Once you get beyond mid-30s, there's more complications. That's the way it is. With a guy's reproductive time frame, that's much farther than that. Men are siring children in their 70s. And so you've got this foundational piece, first of all, that it's really amoral. I mean, it functions. It has a job to do. Make babies. That's its job. Make sure the species survives. And as I've said, there's 7 billion of us, so it's doing a pretty good job of it. That's what that's designed to do. But you can't understand all the turmoil. You can't really understand all of the turmoil that's involved without, in addition to that, understanding that there is flesh involved. Because this is where everything turns ugly. Because the flesh understands those subsystems, and so it pushes things. It pushes men towards lust. It pushes women towards fear and anxiety. And so, of course, women have this natural gravitation towards princess, because they're looking for safety, because they're looking to be loved, they're looking to be looked up to, they're looking for this place, they're looking for some place to have children and the children be protected, and there's this drive in women to reproduce. And so once you kind of put it in that context, not only do you get the reason why, as an overall environment, there would be more focused on women on their age than there is on men, because it all comes back to reproductive span. But then there's this grinding, there's this ridiculous preoccupation with reproductive rituals and people's suitability. Why would we ask Jennifer Aniston, so how do you feel about not having children and you're turning 40? Because it's all about the reproductive stuff. You know, why are we so interested in that young lady who's wearing the short skirt? Because there's easier access and it's all about the reproductive stuff, as it has been amplified and distorted by the flesh. And so, you know, those two things working together. So what is the solution then? What is the solution? Well, not focusing on appearance is a good solution. Good solution. You know? And we really should be teaching our young women that there's more to you than just the fact that you can have babies. You know, you have a mind. You should hone that. You should educate yourself. You should move forward. But then I don't know how you fight against the flesh without being aware of the flesh. And I think that's a really important key component about this. If we don't talk about the reproductive system, if we don't talk about the distortions that the flesh causes on top of that, then how in the world are people supposed to deal with this stuff? So my solution isn't necessarily to try to get everyone else not to click on those links. My solution is not try to get the entire fabric of social media changed or regulated, or trying to change all of the mass media outlets in the world. Because all of that flesh aggregates up into the world. And beyond that, there is Satan that certainly is trying to push his agenda as well. And so you have this inertia of this worship of fertility, this worship of a very narrow segment of the whole reproductive process, insemination, because that's what sells. Because you can get to both sides, gender, both sides at the same time by just focusing on insemination. But I think you have to take men and women and say, look, this is what's going on. This is what your flesh is trying to tell you about these reproductive rituals. This is why people put bikini-clad women next to stacks of tires and trying to sell tires, because they're not selling you tires, they're selling you insemination. And you need to look at that and tell yourself that. That's a lie. That's a lie. I'm not believing that. I'm not looking at that. And instead focus internally, and every time you're told, well, if you just had a baby, everything would be fine, you'd say, no, that's not true. But until individuals recognize the work of the flesh in their lives, until individuals recognize that they've got these engines at the bottom of all this, that's driving this, and until they recognize that these engines, they don't deal in consciousness and intelligence and empathy and kindness and generosity. They don't deal in any of that stuff. They just have one job, make babies. And until you recognize, okay, that's down there, but that doesn't mean I need to listen to that. I have free will. I can choose. I can meditate. I can commune with God. I can develop my relationship with God. I can know who I am in Him. Now, that's one way that'll work too. And you don't actually have to. The wonderful thing about being in a relationship with Jesus is you really don't have to understand all about the sub and the flesh and all that kind of stuff. If you just keep your mind stayed on Him, the scripture obviously is correct when it says that He will keep us in perfect peace if our minds are stayed on Him. I have to stop talking because I have to call a buddy. So I'm going to call my buddy. But it's just, in my mind, it's a little bit sad to see people recognizing that there's a problem and thrashing around with the problem and then trying to come up with solutions, making their best efforts to come up with solutions, when really the solutions that they're coming up, they are not going to work. You can't push back against all that flesh. All you can do is change your own mind. You change your own approach to life. You can stop listening to the lies that the flesh is telling you, or focus more deeply on the truth that God is telling you about who you are and what you're worth. Either of those things will work. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.